Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for staying with me. Jim Ostroff is our guest. He's our good friend, associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and he's here with some really good stuff for us to talk about. Jim, welcome back to the show.
Well, good morning, Jim, and good morning, everybody.
It's good to have you back. Thanks. Hey, Jim, before we get into the letter, I just want to talk about something that's just happened overnight, and that is this spy satellite.
Right.
It's been in orbiting Earth for how long, Jim? 30, 40 years or something?
This is just a few years.
This has only been up a few years?
A few years, but it went out of control very quickly.
Yeah. So it was about to crash to Earth, and it had a fuel cell on it that had some radioactive particles in it, didn't it?
It had 1,000 pounds of highly toxic hydrazine fuel.
It wasn't radioactive. I thought it was radioactive.
No, I believe this was not radioactive.
Just a kind of a hazardous material.
Very hazardous material.
And they were afraid it would land somewhere and hurt some people or contaminate a water table or something like that.
Right.
This thing's about as big as a bus, right?
That's right. That's a good analogy. And the concern is the canister would survive reentry.
Right.
But
that the other parts of it would break off and burn up in the friction of entering the atmosphere. But
right.
the canister with the fuel, the dangerous fuel, might survive.
That's right. And perhaps cause harm to people.
Right.
Maybe. Small chance, but maybe.
And for that reason, and this is the story that we're sticking to, right, Jim?
That's right.
For that reason, we felt the need to shoot it down, the United States.
That's what the U.S.
This is a U.S. spy satellite, folks.
That's right.
So we felt that it's in everybody's interest, including our enemies, to shoot this thing down. And the analogy that they've used, Jim, is that imagine trying to shoot a bullet with a bullet.
Oh, absolutely. It's very hard. Very hard.
Yeah.
And,
but Jim, tell the audience. I mean, I know most people probably know by now, but maybe not. What happened?
It's believed that we did it.
It's not believed, Jim. We did it.
we did it. I mean, the last I heard, it might be a little dated earlier, was that they hadn't confirmed absolutely, but.
I thought they'd confirmed it, but they shut the thing down, and Jim, and of course you and I are saying we did it. It causes me to bring up one of the main things that I wanted to mention about this. This is just another example of the outstanding minds, technology, and human beings that the United States has in defense of our country. Our men and women in the military, the men and women who are behind our Defense Department, the things that we do to keep us safe, to make sure that we know what's going on before the bad guys do. This is another example of the dedication and the capability and the execution of these very special people. All the men and women on the aircraft where this I think this was shot from an aircraft, right? I mean from a ship.
The Lake Erie, from a ship. Called the USS Lake Erie.
The Lake Erie, right. All those men and women on that ship, can you imagine the exuberance of that group, of that bunch of folks right now?
I'm so proud
of them, and every American should stop for a moment and just really soak up, in my opinion, soak up this success story, and feel. I think we ought to feel a little bit safer.
Well, and in another way, let me just say absolutely here that the U.S. Realized this had gone out of control, calculated where it might fall, said it small chance, but it could fall in a populated area, maybe less. It could cause harm. In deciding to try to take it out, had waited, making it even more difficult and chancy until the satellite was in very low Earth orbit at that point. the idea being that we hit it and we would likely blow it up and cause any remnant pieces to quickly fall into the atmosphere. Just 2 years ago, the Chinese decided, actually, they were testing anti-missile systems, but to shoot down an old satellite 600 miles above the Earth. Result is, instantly, another, like, 5,000 pieces of space junk.
That will be up there forever.
It'll be there at least for hundreds of years.
To hit whatever kind of spacecraft, whoever may be up there.
That's right. It's a danger.
It's very dangerous. It's very ill-advised. And plus, they did it without telling anybody. We've told the world that we were going to do
this. Right.
We telegraphed this. But you know, Jim, there's one other thing that I said a minute ago. This is the story we're sticking to. Obviously, it was a good thing to shoot this thing down. But it was also not a bad thing for the rest of the world to see how proficient we are at this sort of thing. And, Jim, did you see how long it took that rocket to get there and shoot this thing down? It wasn't very long.
No, it wasn't. It was very quick. I mean, these things travel very fast.
And they've got computers inside of them. They lock on to this target, and they recalibrate like every, you know, like 1,000 times a second or something like that.
Milliseconds, and they recalculate.
And so they just lock in on it and shoot the darn thing down. And I tell you, I feel proud to be an American today with what's happened. I feel a little safer, maybe a lot safer. And it sends a message to other people who might want to cause us harm, like Iran, for example, who would like to have the capability to shoot a missile off and with a nuclear warhead in some places. It makes me happy that not only do we have this capability, but Jim, we can move this capability around the world, not just in the U.S.
and North Korea. And other rogue nations now or in the future, there's no question that there are those who would like to get the bomb or, you know, long-range missile and hit the U.S. It just is. And I was going to say, and then of course, the U.S. has been working for more than 20 years to develop effective anti-missile systems.
Thank you, President Reagan.
But it couldn't be done, right? It was impossible, they said.
He was the guy who proposed this. He got poo-pooed by the opponents and the peaceniks and all those guys who think, you know, you can sing kumbaya and stop the bad guys. And now President Reagan's legacy continues. 20 after, I'm Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate, an unabashed admirer of Ronald Reagan. Jim Ostroff and I will be right back. 20 after, I'll be right back.
Tell me a secret, tell me a lie, tell me the truth if you have to. Say what you see fit, but don't ask me why. Love never seems to last you. It's a new expression on my face.
Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining me today. My websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. Check them out, use them to your advantage, and I think you'll be glad you did, because there's a lot of good stuff there that'll help you have the maximum opportunity to be successful. Jim Ostroff is our guest. We're having a great visit with him. He's associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and we're talking about the Kiplinger Letter. And Jim, the United States there are consumers all over the world, Jim.
Right. There are. Every
but consumerism
country.
In the U.S. is on steroids and has been now for most of the 20th century, and certainly no abatement in the 21st century.
Right.
But there are some people who are saying that maybe the consumer age is dead. What does Kiplinger have to say about that?
Not at all. And the thing here is that basically the premise for this, we were looking at what is likely a short and shallow recession that's occurring now, and the fact that basically this, that, you know, there are certain sectors that are really feeling some pain. I got to say, you can look at the auto sector, advertising, and actually a number of retailers who are really taking it on the chin. But the point is that, you know, there are reasons for it, that those are essentially exceptions rather than rules, and where there are industries or sectors suffering, you know, it's basically this, that they have their own problems, some each of them somewhat unique problems. Some of them are their own problems that they foisted on themselves, but that doesn't indicate that, you know, consumer spending is going to tank and going to drop. It won't happen.
Well, let me tell you something else, Jim, that we need to point out. Yes, there have been some layoffs, mostly by big companies. Yes, the growth in American jobs, which we're going to talk about in just a little bit, yes, that's off a little bit. But remember, this economy has created about 7 or 8 million new jobs in the last 4 years.
I mean,
there had to be some kind of a correction. Let me tell you another reason why there aren't that many new jobs being created, Jim. We've already got maybe as many as 2 million job openings that aren't being filled in America. We had that as late as last fall. And when you've got that many job openings, at some point in time, businesses are going to start saying, you know what? We got to make another plan. We need to grow our business. We can't find the people to operate. You're not going to grow businesses as fast when you max out on the people you can hire.
That's right. It's not black and white, you know.
And so there are a lot of different reasons for this. And so I don't think it's the job worry thing. But I'll tell you something else, though, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
In a survey that we reported on this week on the show from Chuck Martin, he said that about 60% of small businesses are planning to hire people this year.
Well,
and you never hear that reported in the main media, mainstream media.
No. Because they
hear about it on this show.
They look at the big numbers, really.
Yeah.
The big numbers.
Yeah. They look at the numbers that are handy for them. My folks aren't handy to them.
Well, they do.
And they don't understand us, Jim. I'm sorry. They don't understand us. They only understand Wall Street. They don't understand small business. They don't understand Main Street at all.
No, and that's where that's where the action is.
Mainstream is where it's happening, Jim.
Well, it is, and as we
more
know,
every year.
Year in and year out, you know, I mean, mainstream small businesses are the engine of job creation in this country, beginning and end of story. End of innovation. So, you take these things with a pound of salt at least, you know, and those things, because they'll be hectoring and screaming at Wall Street firms and, you know, about this or that.
You mean like I do?
Oh, no. What I mean is about for instance, the overexpansion or incredible bonuses given by Wall Street firms or other things like that. But that is one part of the story, maybe the least important part in some ways.
What does Kiplinger have to say is about the stimulus package? What do you think that's going to – what kind of an impact is – are individuals getting $600 back and families getting $1,200 back? What are you guys saying that's going to do?
It'll be the end of history. We'll have no problems, and I'm lying. No, basically this. It'll have a very mild effect, and certainly not until towards the end of this year.
Money's not even going to be in our hands until the summer, right?
Not beginning in summer, really, and then trickling out perhaps a few months. But it will have a mild effect. It really is... just sort of a cursory pump priming, as I used to say, but it won't help very much. Maybe the most important thing is that if it sends a sign to people saying that things will, maybe they'll be better.
So what you're saying is the impact might be more emotional and mental than physical.
That's correct. It may well be, and that could be important. I mean, people's, you know, consumer confidence and attitude is
it's amazing what an emotional beast the marketplace is, isn't it?
Absolutely. When all is said and done, the people look and they do numbers and data, but it's what's in people's head that matters.
It's amazing. And actually, Jim, when you go there, it gets scary. I don't like to think about it too much because it gets scary. Stand by, quick break. Right back with Jim Ostroff. I am Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. It's 29 after. Stay with me.
And he makes it fast with one more thing.
Yep, he's done it again, folks.
Oh, no, not again. Oh, my goodness gracious.
Named to Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100 for the third year in a row.
It's not the first time. It won't be the last.
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the man who can't tell time. Thank you for joining me. It's my pleasure, and we're visiting with our good friend Jim Ostroff. And Jim, one of the things that we're talking about, the stimulus package the government has cooked up, and I've been against it from day one. I was against it the moment I heard about it. I'm still against it. Now that I know the details, I'm still against it. I'm even more against it than I was before. Mm-hmm. I think it's a failed policy. I think it's going to be a mistake. I know it's going to be $150 billion in extra debt that where somebody's ultimately going to have to pay back. It's going to create all kinds of systemic problems in our economy and in our ability to compete globally. It's a big mistake. Let me tell you another reason why. All this stuff, the deduction for the small business advantages that I understand are that the Section 179 direct expensing from $125,000 a year, $125,000 in direct expensing, has been increased to double that, to $225,000.
Right, right.
Most small businesses don't need $225,000 in direct expense write-off a year.
So it's in that sense, it's worthless.
Here's the thing: there are some businesses, some businesses out there, this will benefit,
right.
but it doesn't for most. But here's what happens: the politicians say, "Oh, look what we did! We just doubled that." Well, you know what? It's like giving a sow a side saddle.
Right, right.
You know, she doesn't need it.
That's right.
And so then that's what they did, you know. So then they say, well, why don't we just give her two? That'll be great, won't it? We'll be heroes.
That's right.
She didn't need one. What did she need with two?
Well, that's why they're politicians.
And that's exactly right. And so Jim, it's so embarrassing, really, to see how they demonstrate without any kind of subtlety at all. They demonstrate to the world how little they understand about how the marketplace and the economy works. When they do things like this, it's basically them saying, let me see, how can I prove to everybody that we know nothing about what's going on out there?
Don't know, don't care, effectively.
Yep. Yep.
In many cases, for most members.
I'm disgusted, Jim. I'm disgusted with Congress about this, among other things. I really am. Jim, let's move over and talk about the economic forecast, just a few of these things. All the arrows are down except for crude oil, and that's going up. It closed above 100 this week.
It did just the other day at 101. I have to say we don't see crude oil staying there. We actually see moderation. But
yeah.
I should say on some of these arrows, we say arrows are pointing down, but that's an indication that growth is not as much as it was, say, last year. And that is, for instance, GDP overall growth of about 1.5% this year. But I got to tell you something. You know, we're looking at that and you say that is anemic, that's weak. But you can look at outlook for a large portion of Europe and Japan, the world's second largest economy,
mm-hmm.
and they're having pretty good years. And their GDP growth is about 1.5%.
They think 2% is their hair on fire.
It's just that they need to slam on the brakes.
Yeah.
And it's just endemic to those countries and those societies for various reasons as discussed before. I mean, for them, 1.5% is okay. It's good.
Yeah.
But over here, we're wringing our hands.
And they're willing to live with high unemployment too, Jim.
And
we're not.
Unemployment close to double digit, even in good times.
Yeah.
That's what they say is okay.
Jim, did I tell you about the survey that when I was in Denmark in June of last year, and while I was there, I heard about a survey that was conducted. The American Chamber of Commerce in Denmark also works with the folks in Sweden, and they told us about a Swedish survey that was conducted, and of people, what are the top three professional things that you'd want to, what would be the three most important things to happen to you professionally? Number one was to have a job. Number three was to own a small business. Guess what number two was?
I don't know. Please,
the second most desirable thing to have happen to you professionally in Sweden was to be unemployed.
Because
the benefits are so strong. They have such a network, such a social net over there to catch people, to prevent them from getting off their backside and going out and finding something or starting a business. They would rather be unemployed than starting their own business. Now, what does that say about that country, about their attitudes? And that's the reason why, those guys are willing to live with 1.5% growth. We'll take a quick break. We got the Stones taking us out. We're going to come right back and talk about a bunch of other stuff with our good friend Jim Ostroff, including some energy stuff. Stay with us.
Well, I sort of tired of crying, but I'm out on the road again. I'm on the road again.
A little bit of Canned Heat for you there. That's from the Wayback Machine. 17 till. Welcome back. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and not on the road today, but we'll be next week. I'm going to be on the road a couple of days next week, the end of the week. Going to be down in Houston. Looking forward to that. We got Jim Ostroff with us right now, folks. As you know, Jim is an associate editor with the Kipling Editors. He's been a great member of our Brain Trust and such a stalwart supporter of all the things that we do. Jim, we appreciate that. We appreciate you and your time very much. And I like telling the audience about your website, kiplinger.com. And I also like telling them about your publications because they're outstanding, folks. You know, Jim, and I've said this before, and I want to say it again. One of the things I admire about Kiplinger is the fact that your business is a family business. It's not a tiny business, but it's still a family-owned business. You guys are a pretty good size. I don't know, a couple hundred employees, I guess.
Right.
But it's still out there making it happen as a private organization. In a pretty big ocean full of sharks
in
the industry that you work in. So it's really, really something to be – you guys should be very proud of yourself. And, of course, the publications, folks, are the Kiplinger Letter, the one that we work off of every day. That's every week it comes out. And then we've got the three biweekly letters, the California Letter, the Tax Letter, the Agriculture Letter, and then a magazine too, right, Jim?
We have Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine, which is the original – Personal Finance Magazine, also more than 50 years old.
Right, absolutely. And, of course, the phone number, Jim, give us that.
Yeah, this toll-free number, 800-544-0155.
And, folks, if you call that number, if you go to the website and subscribe to any of these publications, they'll give you a 30-day free trial. So check that out when you get a chance. Jim, let's move over and talk about alternative fuels, some of the energy stuff that you guys cover over here. One of the things is alternative fuels. Are we heading for a problem with ethanol?
We may. The thing here is, again, there has been an enormous build-out of new ethanol facilities. You know, huge numbers of plants come online, and very quickly, our annual output is just about to double from 7.5 to, almost to double to 13 billion gallons.
Yeah.
But right now, that is sort of a little, just about as much ethanol as can be used in gasoline.
Ethanol is not my favorite alternative fuel. In fact, it's not a favorite at all, Jim. It is a mix. It is not a real solution, in my opinion, for long-term alternative energy. Because, Jim, as we all know, it takes as much, if not more, in the total scheme of getting ethanol to market. It takes as much fuel, and it creates as much hydrocarbon as just regular carbon fuel.
I should say there's still a huge amount of debate about that as to whether
it makes the price of food go up, Jim, because the price of corn is going up because of the demand. And Jim, as you know, so much of the food that we eat today is touched in some way by corn.
Oh, absolutely, and other materials made from corn.
Corn oil and all kinds of derivatives. And so our food prices are going up, and I think we need, of all the, if you listed 10 10 alternative fuel options, to me, ethanol would be on the bottom.
It is questionable. But the point here is, I got to say, both sides of the aisle, politicians love it and will continue to go and support ethanol.
Because it's easy to subsidize it, isn't it?
Easy to subsidize, and of course, they can say, for instance, and it's true, you know, most farmers have a real big and steady and ready market for corn.
Yeah.
And that's why it is.
Well, you know, I love my farmers, and I know you feel the same way, but this ethanol thing, in my opinion, is a loser. We need to be focusing on other things. If we're going to use that kind of alternative fuel, any kind of biofuel, I think we need to be working on switchgrass and others, but also especially hydrogen. We need to work on a lot of other kinds of alternative fuels. We need to be putting more money behind those, in my opinion, and not so much behind ethanol. Jim, let's move down to the bottom of page 2 and talk about the conflict between big business and small business in their search for help from the states.
Oh, absolutely. And I got to say, we've looked in this. In many places, there are states, municipalities that are really pushing to get certain large businesses there and operating for the obvious benefits that they see. So they offer a cornucopia of tax breaks and abatements and help. We talked about Home Depot. That is a real example. And, you know, there are other companies large.
So a Home Depot got tax advantages for coming into an area.
Well, they do. And
see, I disagree. And this is what I mean. I disagree with any kind of tax benefits for retail.
Well,
I can see the justification for manufacturing.
Right.
Because manufacturing can kind of go anywhere, but the retailers are going to go where the people are, and you know there are different reasons to locate a factory somewhere than there are to locate a retail establishment somewhere.
Right. And the point is, you might say here, and that's why there have been objections raised by other businesses, particularly small businesses, and now saying, wait a minute, is that fair? And also, now, if fair and equitable, is it really going to do much for you, city or state? And that's why Arizona is finally stepping in and basically saying, it's like, whoa, wait a minute, you can't just offer tax break.
Well, and I'll tell you something. I know that there are some states who've done this successfully, I'm not against all tax abatements, but I will tell you, more and more states need to realize that they need to focus more time on small businesses and helping them to grow, and not all of their time on bringing in the big plants. Tintail, stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's 7-2. Little Buddy Holly and the Crickets for you there. That's really from the Wayback Machine. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. Jim Ostroff is our guest, and we're talking about the most recent Kiplinger letter. And, Jim, one of the things you guys reported on this week on page 3 is the health care debate that's being this part of the presidential campaigns this year.
Right,
talk to
us
about what you guys say.
And to put it in perspective, when it comes to health care, whom will employers vote for? The answer is none of the above. It's not businesses, but individuals as well, you know, want some type of new health care legislation because they're facing enormous costs. But there's concern about the plans put out there so far by McCain, Obama, and Clinton. It's just the big concern, of course, is that we'll end up paying a large amount of money to subsidize, you know, workers with little payback and a system that really is likely to be not very good.
And most of it is rooted in the worst of the 20th century stuff that isn't working in the 21st century, and putting that stuff and increasing the dysfunction of all that. I mean, we've got to come up with some 21st century solutions, Jim. Universal health care is not one of them. Employer-based health care is not one of them. We've got to get health care portable and incremental. We've got to get it based on the individual and find a way to, if we're going to subsidize this, we got to quit doing it through the employers, start doing it through the employees. because that's the way the marketplace is moving these days. And we've got to give small businesses small business health plans. We've got to make it so that small businesses can negotiate health care across state lines and find solutions wherever they can and get the best price that they can. And, Jim, what they don't realize, and this is another example of how the government doesn't understand what's going on, what they don't realize is that this country is poised for an incredible growth spurt, an incredible growth dividend, if they would just pass small business health plans.
Well, there are many people who see that and argue that, but I have to say, why not? It really, ultimately, and it's true, it is political. There are those, and even on both sides of the aisle, who don't want that because they lose control.
Well, because of the Blue Cross Blue Shield and AARP lobby.
Right, right. And
you know, folks, let me tell you something. If you are a small business owner and you want, and if you're in the age where they can, you can join, you're old enough to join AARP. If you are a small business owner, you want small business health plans. You agree with me? AARP is not your friend. I am not a member of AARP, and I don't plan to be.
They oppose it absolutely, and again, it's ultimately really for political reasons, for lobbying reasons. You do that, and you reduce your ability to influence legislation.
And our lobbyists apparently aren't big enough gorillas to fight their lobbyists, and that's what happened the last time.
That's what
so
it comes to.
Anyway, it's folks. This is a big debate right now. This is going to be a big part of the debate. Iraq's not going to be on the table in this election cycle, but healthcare is, and we need to all get a little bit more educated about what you want, what you think is best. We've got to find some 21st century solutions. Just no question about it. Jim, talk to us about the human resources stuff you guys covered this week.
Well, basically this, you know, they were coming down the pike really tough penalties against businesses or individuals for hiring illegals, illegal immigrants, illegal people. The regulations are going to force employers to fire undocumented workers, you know, if their Social Security numbers don't match up with the government files.
This is going to be a nightmare, isn't it?
And this is, in many ways, people say, an overreaction that's going to cause a lot of harm. And the thing is, you know, this will harm probably small businesses inordinately, depending where they are, but even large companies as well. But after all is said and done, there is really question about the U.S. government's database and whether it is accurate, whether it's good, and whether it's timely. But the point here is that, you know, what about employers who follow the rules, do things, and then they get wrong information? Are they still liable?
Or they make an honest mistake? Are they making an honest mistake?
An honest mistake. It happened.
Yeah. Right now, they're in jeopardy, aren't they?
They are. Yeah. It's our government.
Folks, you got to pay attention to this. You might need to get some help to make sure you're doing this the right way, that you're hiring. If you're hiring a bunch of people and you're not sure about their documentation, you got to check it out. Hey, Jim, thanks for being here. Good job today.
Thank you.
We'll see you next time. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.